Those who were present this morning in the meditation hour, I just explained what is meant by meditation. The meditation in two words is to direct your attention, which is the outward expression of soul, from all outside and from all the body below, take it to the seat of the soul in the body, which is at the back of the eyes. Just the process of death. Man, when dying, he does not recognize anybody. His attention is withdrawn from outside. And further, the lower body is benumbed and the attention is upward until the eyes are upward, to the back of the eyes. So that was practical, sitting was given, and most of you people did know that you are not the body, and you also did open the inner eye, single eye, to see one phase of God into expression, which is light. God is light. The symbols of which we use in our meditations, in our temples, in outer ways of worship. Now, each kernel has its own kitchen. This attention was the outward expression of the soul, which is at the feet at the back of the eyes. So it was a casing which you are carrying. This is called man body. So God made man, this outer casing, with equal privileges. All born the same way, all have got the outer form the same, two eyes, two hands, two ears, mouth, inner constitution also the same. So man has got heart, lung, stomach. Every morning, municipality takes out the filth of the body. No high, no low. So you'll find, so man has three aspects. It has the physical body, it has intellect, and it is conscious entity. Physically, we advance wonder for it. We know how the body is made, how it can be kept fit, how the diseases arise, how those can be remedied. We have got so many patches for that. Ayurvedic is the oldest. Yunani system comes next. Then allopathy, naturopathy, homeopathy. There are so many systems which help us to keep our body fit. We have got intellect. We have dwelt also intellectually, wonderfully. That is before you all. We can go around the world in hours. We have reached the moon, another planet we have tried. We can hear from thousands of miles through the radio. We can also see through television, through speaking. So with all these intellectual advancements and the physical advancements, we are not happy. The reason why we have known little or practically nothing about our own self, which is conscious entity, the outward expression of which is attention, as I explained to you this morning. So masters come, they say, God is spirit. and the Spirit of God is in man. So, what is spirituality? That I have to put before you now. Spirituality is knowing oneself and knowing God. Man body is a wonderful house we live in which there are so many apertures. With all these apertures open, we cannot run away out of it. Body works so long as we are in the body, and we are in the body controlled by some power which keeps us in the body. So man body is considered to be highest in all creation, next to God. Angels were asked to bow down before the man body when it was bent. So we are drops of the ocean of all consciousness, but with all that we also have the same essence as that of God, and that God whom we can have to meet is also within this man body. With so much privilege, we are not happy. The reason why? Our soul, the outward expression of which is identified with the body, outgoing faculties and enjoyment. So much so that we have forgotten our soul. Body is made of matter, and world is also made of matter. Soul is eternal, but the body which is dwelling, and which is working, is changing every moment of life, and the world outside also is changing at the same speed at which our body is changing. As we are identified with the body and with the world outside, this all appears to be stationary, which is optical illusion. If you like to bring home this point, take the example of a boat in which human are rowing down the stream. Boat is rowing down the stream, the speed of the water and the speed of the boat is the same. And those who are sitting in the body, they are also flowing at the same rate. They enjoy it. They look to the water, it appears to be stationary, and boat also stationary. If for a while they look to the shore of the river, oh, sir, we are going down the stream. So this illusion, optical illusion, we have to come out of that. Only we will see the world in its right perspective. World is changing. Those who came, kings are the who are happy or the unhappy, all who came to the body, they after all left the body. But under great illusion, when they came to know at the time of death that now we are leaving the body. This body is the first companion that we have with us when entering the world. But when we go, this body does not accompany us. And all those things which have come in our connection, how can they go? Those you guys, they are out of this illusion, they tell us the world passing, time and tide waits for no man. The day is arriving when you will have to leave the body. So we have been identified with the world outside so much so that we have forgotten ourselves. Now the only remedy is we should know how to leave the body at will. To masters who solve the mystery of life, they said, gave out, "Man, know thyself, who you are, what you are. You are not the body, you are having the body. You are not the intellect, but you have the intellect. You are not the outgoing faculty, but you have them for you. And you are conscious entity, conscious being. How to know that? How to come out of this grand illusion? For that this morning was submitted to you how the soul, the outward expression of his attention can be withdrawn from outside and take up about the body consciousness, and you would have found there that you are not the body. And further peep, you add into the beyond, and most of you did see light of God. On the lower scale, of course. So how to come out of this delusion is by self-analysis, not by feelings or emotions or drawing inferences. They are all subject to error. Seeing is above all. So all this, what it appears to be, is all illusory. It's changing like anything. And we come to know about it when we really rise above body consciousness. So this is what men have, you see. Then what is spirituality? I have just placed before you. Spirituality, God is spirit, and spirit of God is man. God is all consciousness, and we are drafts of the ocean of that consciousness, environed by mind and matter. As I submitted just now, our soul is under the control of mind. Mind is under the control of outgoing faculties, and outgoing faculties are dragged like anything but the outer enjoyments. We identify with it, we cannot differentiate. In theory we might, intellectually we might infer. Really we cannot see it is right perspective unless we ourselves rise above body consciousness. The demonstration of which was given to you at the time. So spirituality is knowing who you are, what you are. What is your connection with the body? How long will it continue? After all, each man has to leave the body. What be our fate beyond? So this rising of our body consciousness, withdrawing our attention from outside and from the body below, rise up to come in contact with the Spirit of God, God into special power, this truly means spirituality. So spirituality is no spiritism. Spiritism to be in contact with the lower groveling spirits which are left body. And it is no spiritualism. It is only come in contact with those souls who go a bit higher in the other world. You contact them through planchets and other things to get their messages. But they cannot give you messages more than they have attained already. They are no wiser than when they left your body. So that is not spirituality. And hypnotism also no spirituality. And mesmerism also, the people think the other way. So spirituality means self-analysis practically. A way out from the physical body into the beyond. How to do it? How can we separate our body from the entanglements of the outgoing faculties and attachments of the out of the world and the body below? This is, strictly speaking, spirituality. Now, I am coming to the case inside. Man has got body, physical body. Masters who came, they solved, they analyzed the man body, what it is composed of. Ultimately they come to know what is that driving force which is carrying along the body. And that we are. We are controlling the faculty of the man body with its different departments of seeing, hearing, taste, smell and touch. So it is we on account of us that this body is working. When we withdraw, the body remains intact as it is, whole machine intact, but the driver is gone. And there is one thing more. We are also controlling the body. We cannot leave the body. Although there are so many holes open, so masters come to give us a demonstration as to how to rise above body consciousness. And this process of leaving the physical body, rising to the beyond, coming in contact with that all-controlling power is, strictly speaking, spirituality, what is called. So God, let us come out to the outer casing of it. God made man, as I told you, with the same privilege from God, no high, no low. And the masters who solved the mystery of life, whosoever met them, they were also succeeded in solving the mystery of knowledge himself. To know themselves, it is the first step. All masters, whether they came in the East or the West, all said so. Greek philosophers told the same thing in their Greek language. Gnothi theaton. Latin philosophers get in Latin, Gnothi tiptum. Persian philosophers also said in Persian language, of course, the ultimate goal of all knowledge is to know God. And to know God, who can know God? God cannot be known by the outgoing faculty, mind or intellect. So, it is our own self, which is conscious entity, when it is liberated from the entanglements of mind and outgoing faculties, by rising above it, only then we can know the old self which is controlling us in the body. Light knows the life. So, when the master left the scene to keep their teachings alive, these religions, social bodies, what they are, came into existence. The purpose was very noble, that most of the people may derive benefit by joining those schools of thought. The labels of which we are now carrying. You see, as man, we are man. Later on, whatever labels we are carrying on the body, we are called by that. Some Hindus, some Mohammedans, some Christians, some Sikhs, some Jews, like that. If you look to a small child who is 2-3 years old, not more than that, if you ask him who you are, he opens his eyes, opens his mouth, he feels something conscious here. As he grows old, outer impressions find he has. Then he says, who you are? He says, I am Mr. Jan, I am Mr. Khan, I am Mr. Singh, I am such and such. When a more further impressions come into his self, then he says, I am a Christian, I am a Hindu, I am a Mohammedan, you see. I am an Indian, I am a Russian, I am American. Just see how far he has receded from the consciousness which a little child has. So it is the consciousness that we are. We are conscious entities. And that to be withdrawn from all outside and know ourselves so that we can run the machinery of the man body in outside world whenever we like. If not, we can withdraw from there. So such men, their bodies appear to be in the world, but their souls are in mouthpiece of God, contact with God. Their bodies appear to be entangled in the worldly affairs day and night, but whenever they want, they rise above body consciousness and travel into the beyond. That's the difference. As I told you this morning, with the average man and the one who has succeeded that way, is a vast difference. We are at the mercy of the outgoing faculties and enjoyments. We are dragged like anything, whether we wish it or not. But one who has, with the grace of some adapted body, he has given him a demonstration as to how to rise above body consciousness. He rises above the outgoing faculty. The seat of the soul is at the back of the eyes. And all outgoing faculties have their place below, ears, eyes, nose, down. The 5 decades, lust, anger, greed, taste and touch, they have got their centers to work. Lust attacks from the eyes, through the eyes. Anger has a boost when you hear. Taste through the tongue and smell through the nose. So those who have just competent to have their feet there at the back of the body, at the back of the eyes, he is competent to use any of the effect at his will and pleasure. So this is what the difference between the average man and the other man. So religions, I told you, that were raised with a very noble purpose so that many people may derive benefit therefrom by joining it. So long as they are practical people, people derive the full benefit of that. For want of them, the same formations raised with noble purpose stagnated. Further deterioration came up. Masters, they come from time to time when they see this plight of the world, they say, dear children, know thyself, who you are. Again they revive that very truth, which is the basic teachings of all masters, and they bring home these things to them. Now soul, as I told you, is of the same essence as that of God. God is all consciousness and soul is conscious entity. So physically, you see, we are all one, with equal privilege from God. As soul, we are also of the same essence as that of God. We are all children of God, we are all brothers and sisters in God. And the power that we worship as God by so many names, is the same which is controlling all universe and controlling us in the body too. So as man, as soul, as whom we worship, we are all already one. The unity exists, but we have forgotten. There are thousands, limitless people praying God, bearing different labels on the man body. But to whom they bow down? To God, who is the controlling power of all creation. First they have to know themselves. So like archers, you see, there are many archers, but the point, target is the same always. Whether you have the outer labels of one religion or the other that show in which school, particular school of thought you are taken up to solve the mystery of life. This is basic teachings given by all masters in their own language, of course. That school is better to be is appreciated, from which many students come out successful. Not that whose buildings are very grand, whose playing grounds are very beautiful, whose dresses and students are very magnificent, but where from many turn out get highest degrees. So as I told you, all this light came up for want of practical people. So masters always tell us what they bring us. They say first of all that there is a maker of all this universe. He also made your body in the womb of the mother. So, Master said the same thing. They say, love God and all those whom God has created. So all scriptures when you see, look through them, they enjoin this thing. God is love, and love is God. Tenth Guru says, hear ye all, lend me your ears, I tell you the truth, whether you bear the labels of one school or the other, the way back to God is also through love. God is love, and love is innate in our souls. Now, instead of that love being had a boost by coming in contact with all love which is controlling us in the body, that being attached to the outside things, which is termed attachment. Love knows giving, and attachment means squeezing, dragging something, usurping something for one's own self. Vast difference between the two. So they bring the religion of love. Kabir also, all masters I say, Kabir says, well, love thy man body is the only golden opportunity in which you can love God. How? When you are brought in contact with God, which is controlling you in the body. The outer expression of which is light and sound. So if someone is, we have got love for the world, which is called attachment, that's the reason we go where we are most attached. In man body, we could have contacted God within us, which is all love. Had that become the ruling passion, then naturally after death we would have gone to the lap of the Father. the reason of our coming again and again, ever since we were separated from God, we have not yet been successful to go back to our home. So all masters tell us like that. All those who are on the spiritual way, St. Paul said, what you should serve one another with love. Blessed one who served his fellow men, he is the true lover of God. So one and all, you see, Taylor said, he, in his poem, he prays best who loves best.
Good morning and welcome to the satsang for Master Kripal Singh. The recording you just heard was the first part of the talk called True Spirituality. It was given by Master on 8th October 1972 in New York City. Our reader this morning is Michael Brown. Good morning, Michael.
Good morning, Pradeep, and thank you. Good morning to all. Today I'll continue reading from Master's book, The Mystery of Death, beginning where I left off last time I read, which was January, beginning of this year, on page 62 of Chapter 3. The process of getting fully into and staying completely in the eye focus, the gateway to the so-called death, is akin to a part of the process of death. The process of withdrawal of sensory currents from the body below the eyes is a voluntary one, and one comes to experience the mysteries of the beyond into which a master soul, Satguru, initiates a disciple during his lifetime. He gives a first-hand inner experience of conscious contact with the holy Nam, the divine light, and the holy sound current, the Holy Ghost, as coming from the right side as the lowest expressions of divinity within. One cannot, by one's own unguided and unaided efforts, have an access into the spirit world when one cannot hold on by himself, even in the physical world, without the active aid and guidance of many teachers from the cradle to the grave. Herein lies the paramount need and importance of Satguru, or Murshid-e-Kamal, the perfect master, an adept in the science and art of soul, competent enough to disentangle the spirit currents from every pore of the body, the plane of sensations as it is, and to rise it above body consciousness to witness for himself the inner divine splendiferous glory. With the process of withdrawal of the sensory currents from the body, the death-like process commences. You do not have to do anything. Simply to sit in a calm, composed, and fully relaxed position with attention fixed at the eye focus and engage in Simran, or the repetition of the charged names, which carry the life impulse of the masters through the ages and serve as passwords into the regions beyond. While so established in an easy posture and asan, in healthy surroundings, you forget yourself, entirely forgetting even the life-giving and life-sustaining pranas, vital airs, which will of themselves gradually slow down and grow rhythmic. And so do the entire respiratory and circulatory systems of the body. At first, the sensory currents begin to gradually withdraw from the extremities of the body, tips of the hands and feet, and come upwards and gradually pass through the various bodily centers, each of which being the region of one of the five elements of which the body is composed, until taking off from the heart center, they reach the throat center, the seat of Shakti, the mother of the universe, the all-pervading energy. Benumbing the entire bodily system below the eyes, and then proceed directly to the center behind the eyes, Ajna Chakra, This is where the spirit currents get collected and gain an entry into the foxhole within Brahmendra, or the hole of Brahma, and have a peep into the Brahmand, or the cosmic universe. This is the 10th aperture in the body, the only inlet apart from the 9 outlets. This is the place where you have to knock and get admittance into the realms above. Realms more vast, more glorious, self-luminous, and self-resounding with rapturous strains of celestial music, unheard of anywhere in the physical world which has been left below. Now, no more than a great slum area fraught with miseries and tribulations, fading into a faint reflection of the world of ideas, as Plato puts it. At this stage, man becomes truly blessed, blessed at having access to the aerial regions, the world of spirits. He is now at the threshold of the astral world in company of the radiant form of the Master, Gurudev, with Guru Bhakti complete in every respect. When a disciple reaches the radiant form of the Master, his job of self-effort is over. The Gurudev now takes charge of the spirit and trains the spirit in Shabd Bhakti, in the real sense, or devotion to the sound current, in his own real form, Shabd Swarup. From here, he takes the spirit along with him on the spiritual journey that lies through countless regions of varying spiritual sublimity: the causal or instrumental plane, the seed world, the ever-pregnant mother with vast and countless creations lying involved in its room, and then into the supercosmic beyond, Parbrahmand, planes of silence, Sun, and great silence, Mahasun, and finally Satchkhand, where dwells the formless one of ineffable radiance, the ocean of consciousness called Sat Purush, the primal manifestation of the Supreme Being. This holy process is simple, natural, and does not involve any onerous austerities. It does not involve drastic control of pranas. The masters have evolved this rare technique and termed it the science of the soul, which can best be learned under the able and competent guidance of some master saint, well-versed in the theory and practice of life current that exists in all created things, the creative and sustaining principle upholding all. In the beginning was Prajapati, the Supreme Being. With him was Vak, the Holy Word. And the Vak, the Word, was verily the Supreme Brahma, Parbrahma, from the Vedas. In the beginning was the Word, and the Word was with God, and the Word was God. The same was in the beginning with God. All things were made by him, and without him was not anything made that hath been made. In him was life, and life was the light of men. John 1:1-5. Kalam, or Kalma, is the all-creative principle. God spake, Kun Thia Kun, let there be, and from this fiat the whole creation sprang into being, the Al-Quran. Shabd is the creator of the earth. Shabd is the creator of firmament. Shabd is the source of light, and Shabd resides in the hearts of all, Nanak. It is on this basic principle in all existence, light and sound of God, that the Master gives a practical experience to all those who come to him in search of truth. The rare boon of holy initiation, explanation of the theory and demonstration thereof, shiksha and diksha, into the esoteric knowledge and experience of saving lifelines within, is not an end in itself, just a beginning. A preliminary step for starting on the long journey for the soul to the true home of the Father. Those who have chosen to undertake this course of life are indeed fortunate and experience this rare phenomena of death in life. and thus become Jivan Mukat, or the liberated beings, while yet in flesh, leading life in fullness on whatever plane they like, always remaining within the will of God. Such a lucky one, fully entrenched in Godhead, is in full control of his intellect, mind, and senses. He is the master of the house, and not a handmaid of his mind and intellect. Like a good charioteer, sitting in the chariot of the body, he directs his intellect aright, which in turn gives a correct lead to his mind. And mind, when trained in the path of righteousness, refuses to be swayed by the senses, which gradually lose their potency and cease to be attracted by the glamour of the sense subjects. Thus is reversed the primal process of expansion, and one gets settled in himself, with the result that the still waters of the mind begin to reflect the light of God, fulfilling the ancient maxim, unless the senses are subdued, the mind is stilled, and the intellect, too, is in a state of equipoise, one cannot witness the glory of God. This rich experience of life in fullness is variously called the second birth, the birth of the spirit, as distinct from the birth of the flesh. Led by the spirit, one now lives and walks in the spirit, abandoning the lusts of the flesh, and cuts right across the inexorable law of cause and effect, or karma, which keeps all others in perpetual bondage. With the day-to-day progress on this path, new vistas of indescribable joy and beatitude open up and new horizons loom into view, encompassing the totality of all that is, thus giving greater and greater awareness, first personal, then supermental, next cosmic, and supercosmic. Hereafter, the liberated souls, liberated from all the shackles of mind and matter, enjoy perpetual bliss in the life of the spirit with an outlook on life entirely changed. The vast creation, now becoming the manifestation of the one life principle pulsing everywhere in him and around him, and in all things animate and inanimate. The world that he now witnesses is totally different from the world known to him before. It now looks as a veritable abode of God, and one sees God truly dwelling in it, nay, in every constituent part of it, for all created things appear like so many bubbles in a vast ocean of life. Hereafter, he lives unto the Lord and dies unto the Lord. Like St. Paul, he gets crucified in Christ, and Christ lives in him. And with repetitive experience of the death process, he triumphantly swallows death in victory. The Father and the Son become one. Though the outward man of flesh and bones still persists and continues to exist to spin out what remains of the web of life, yet the inward man, the spirit in man, in renewed, growing stronger and more sublime with time. Thomas A. Kempis, therefore, says, "Forsake the flesh for the spirit. Learn to die so that you may begin to live." In this context, we have from Kabir, "While the people are mortally afraid of death, I welcome death as a harbinger of bliss. Die, and be thou dead to the world. Such a death I experience many times a day." In all four Gospels, we come across so many references of like nature. "He that findeth his life shall lose it, and he that loseth his life for my sake shall find it," Matthew 10:39 and 16:25. "For whoever will save his life shall lose it, but whosoever shall lose his life for my sake, and the Gospels the same, shall save it," Mark 8:25. "For whoever shall save his life shall lose it, but whoever will lose his life for my sake, the same shall save it," Luke 9:24 and 17:37. "He that loveth his life shall lose it, and he that hateth his life in this world shall keep it unto life eternal." Dadu, oh, excuse me, that was John 12:25. Dadu, a celebrated saint, says, "O Dadu, learn to die ere death overtakes thee. What will it profit thee when die thou must?" Guru Nanak also says the same thing. "O Nanak, I practice such a yoga as may teach thee to die in life." Prophet Muhammad too exhorted his ummah, or the faithful, to practice the art of dying before death. "Before thy death doth thou die." The mystic Muslim divines like Khwaja Hafiz, Shams Tabriz, and Maulana Rumi greatly emphasize the importance of such unique experience. So long as you do not transcend the plane of the senses, you remain unaware of the inner life. "Thou hast raiments besides the outer physical, one without. Why then dost thou fear to come out of the body?" One can go on multiplying any number of apophthegms on this subject. We may close it with a passage from Earl R. Wasserman. "Many are only imperfect individualizations of the one, and death permits the individualism, and hence unbounded spiritual life. The post-mortal life, therefore, is a spiritual existence for death, destroying the many-colored dome allows the soul to outsoar the shadows of night instead of working inwards to destroy organic existence. What then appears to be physical destruction proves to be spiritual immortality. What we call life is a decay. Therefore, earthly confinement, the mortal atmosphere, stains the radiance of eternity. On the other hand, the resurrected soul, reincorporated in the one, not the shadow of death or physical matter, is discovered in the true senses, spreading itself throughout nature, for the final reality everywhere is spirit. Were the atmosphere of mortality removed, man would perceive that the one remains, and that heaven's light forever shines, and that day and night are one, and so life and death, Lucifer and Vesper, and that the ultimate reality of both, earthly life and the post-mortal eternity, is the spiritual one. And this realization of spiritual identity of mortal and post-mortal life finally ceases the pairings of opposites like life and death, since one glows through time and change unquenchably the same." He then goes on to say, "Learn to go unterrified into the gulf of death, for where mortal existence ends, the spiritual existence begins. With death, the resurrected soul outsoars the shadows of night and is reincarnated into the changeless one." Prophet Muhammad also speaks of death and life in much the same strain. "A death like this will not take thee to the grave. It shall lead thee from darkness to light. Learn to die every day by transcending the body." When a man learns to transcend the human in him, the master in his radiant form comes in to help the soul onwards to its true home, guiding it on the higher planes, both in one's life and even after, when the mortal coil is finally cast off. In this connection, Nanak says, "O Nanak, snap all the ephemeral ties of the world and find out a real friend in some saint. The former shall leave thee while ye live, but the latter shall stand by thee even in the hereafter. Following the instructions of a Satguru, take hold of truth. Be thou true to him, and he shall stand true to thee unto the last." A Muslim dervish likewise says, "O brave soul, take a firm hold of his hem, for he is truly above all the worlds here and hereafter." So we find in the Gospels, "Lo, I shall be with thee till the end of the world. I shall not leave thee or forsake thee." In this way, the highest mission of human life is achieved and the fullness of life experienced. This is the subject of contacting the self by the self which disengaged from the thorns and thistles of the worldly life under the proper guidance and help of a master soul who vouchsafes this experience to all alike, irrespective of sex, age, avocation, religious affinities, and social orders based on blood, caste, color, and creed. The spirit has got to be divested of the false halo of the self-created and self-projected personal that one unwittingly weaves around himself. Unless one becomes a pure spirit, divested of the love of all created things, one cannot enjoy the life of the Creator, which is a life of fullness in Beatitudes. That concludes chapter 3, and we'll get started in chapter 4. Death in bondage. In nature, death follows life, and life proceeds from death. Death is a cessation of life in one form, is but a prelude to reliving in another, and generally at a higher level of existence than before, and in better and more congenial environs. Evolution is the law of life, and it consists in active flowering of the latent possibilities in the spirit matter, and comprises in its compass not only evolution of the spirit matter, which grows more plastic and translucent in its onward march, also evolution of forms from minerals to human entities, and lastly, expansion of self-consciousness. The so-called dead matter is not really dead, though the energy in it may for some time be in a congealed state. A worn-out garment that has outgrown its utility is to be cast off and replaced by a new one, molded in a fashion one desires the most. Such is the law of Dame Nature, the handiwork of God. The kindly Father, it is said, hath ordained that his children may have what they ardently wish for. In providing the essentials of life on the earth plane, love, light, and life, and the necessary adjuncts thereto, like earth, water, sun, air, and space, together with all the means of sustenance, the Supreme Lord of the universe is munificent beyond measure, and provides the same freely to all, though each one gets according to his need and measure of descent. His bounties are innumerable and inexhaustible, and for ages man has fed upon them in diverse ways. Not satisfied with the limited gifts, man ever craves more for more, more of silver and gold, more of amenities and conveniences of life, and more of everything else, and he struggles and strives endlessly for them. Instead of being grateful to the Lord for all that he has by his grace provided us, we curse ourselves, curse those around us in better and more affluent circumstances than us, and curse the innocent stars above, and do not hesitate to cavil at and criticize in stinging terms our own fate or destiny, which we have by our own actions forged for ourselves. With all his possessions, one loses his head for just a pittance. Human life is a great privilege and a rare asset and blessing. It comes after pausing through a long evolution, comes after passing through a long evolutionary process extending over time unending. It is an opportunity for amassing the riches of spirituality that lie hidden within us and of which we are hardly aware. The majority of us are after ephemeral non-essentials, the sense pleasures of the earth life, and not real happiness. For these short-lived and fleeting pleasures, which we may or may not get, we by all measures, fair or foul, try to move heaven and earth, and more often than not pay dearly, even with our own life, and quit the stage of life with many a deep regret for one thing or the other, and for the unworthy means employed, and for the sorrows suffered in the attempt. Nature is not extravagant in her design and purpose. As one thinks, so he becomes. Our feelings and emotions, thoughts and passions, desires and aspirations do not die with the death of the body. They constitute an inner vest, an undergarment, the astral body, below the physical cloak. And the spirit clothed therein goes out to be covered by yet another mantle, drawing upon the karmic seeds lying in store in the seed body, the precious treasure chest. It is this causal or instrumental body with its vast resources that helps its inmate, the spirit, in fashioning a new mold, a fresh tabernacle of flesh, which may serve as a fitting vehicle for the fulfillment of what lies uppermost in the unconscious self. The curtain finally rises, unfolding the entire panorama of life down to the minutest detail ere one passes out of sight from the stage of life. On deathbed, one may get a glimpse of reality, but then it's too late to comprehend it. This process works on and on, giving at the end of each span on earth fresh momentum to the wheel of life and death, with its natural concomitants of joys and sorrows, weal and woe, sometimes up and sometimes low, moving in interminable gyres as one is never satiated with all that one gets in one's sojourn on earth, and goes on adding new hopes and new desires, mixed with many a regret for what he wanted and did not get. He is thus unwittingly engaged perpetually in sowing the dragon's teeth, and life after life he spends in fighting his self-started battles with the self-raised armed bands which, like shadows, follow on his heels as untamed furies or the avenging spirits. Nature, like the potter's wheel, provides the means in the form of many clayey pots, one after the other, for slaking the insatiable thirst and expectation of each individual. Weighed down by countless desires from top to toe, one makes a slave of himself. Without them, one could revel in his godhood. What is man, after all? God plus desires. And conversely, what is God? Man minus desires. The great philosopher-poet William Wordsworth, 1770-1859, draws a beautiful pen picture of a growing child in his memorable Ode on Immortality. The soul that rises with us, our life star, hath had elsewhere its settings, and cometh from afar, not in entire forgetfulness, and not in utter nakedness. Trailing clouds of glory do we come from God, who is our home. Heaven lies above us in our infancy. Shades of the prison house begin to close upon the growing boy. Earth fills her lap with pleasures of her own, yearning she hath in her own natural kind, and even with something of a mother's mind, and no unworthy aim, the homely nurse doth all she can to make her foster child her inmate man. Forget the glories he hath known, and that imperial palace whence he came. This, then, is the sordid picture of life on earth as we witness from day to day. Ever having our fill, as preordained, we are yet hungry, ravenously hungry, for more and more of pelf and power, more of ephemeral pleasures and sense enjoyments, far from being thankful for what we have for the bounties of nature. We look before and after and pine for what is not. Nature cannot remain a silent spectator of our unappeased gluttony, and with her magic wand turns us, Circe-like, into swines, so that we may have our fill of the piffle and be done away with it. It is only some wise Ulysses, armed with a magic flower from Mercury, the messenger of gods, who can fight the enchantress on her own ground and rescue his followers, getting them reconverted from swines into men, and along with them all others held in captivity by the sorceress in many different forms, each according to his or her innate nature. It is the type of the ruling passions, that determine our course of life, not only here, right here now in the living present, also in the hereafter. I think I'll end there. I was reading again from Master's book, The Mystery of Death, and I finished chapter 3 and read into chapter 4. Thank you, Master, for sharing with us these words of wisdom, and for all of you, thank you for listening today.
And thank you, Michael, for reading it for us. Thank you, everybody, for listening. And thank you, Master, for providing this for us.
Further, you see, all Master says, death is awaiting each one of us. There is no escape from death. Whether old or young, or learned or unlearned, that's the door of the death through which each one of us to pass.